accession number 20737, Reel 2.
And then we piled in them, and it's surprising how little details you forget. I'm sure it was all of that. We were all there the one night. We might have been there too. I'm not saying.
Did you speak to any of the French people? What was their attitude? Because, I mean, you were...
Okay, yeah.
Mm. Were they pleased that you'd arrived?
Were they pleased?
Mm. Did they feel you were there?
No. I think it's up with the phony war then. There was nothing happening. Mm. Nothing happening. And if I might be jumping ahead, but we were then finished up at a place called Ronc. That was where Brigade Headquarters was.
Right.
That was just short of the Belgian frontier. And we got on quite well with the people there. But I'll tell you, doesn't matter what I say.
Right. I'm going to end it there. Bill Millard, end of Reel 1. Bill Millard, Reel 2.
Well, we were billeted in this factory in, this will be, maybe say the beginning of May, the 1st of May, something like that, right about that
and
time.
And which town was this?
Ronc. And there were two things that I distinctly remember from there. They used, every morning, this was a cotton mill or something, and we actually slept on the top, one of the top floors of the mill. And these girls used to come down from Belgium, and the teasers, they used to sit on a lower stone wall, and as we were coming back from having our breakfast, they'd tease us. And of course, this morning, as we were coming past, there'd perhaps be about a dozen of them sat on this low stone wall, well, brick wall, stone wall, anyway, whatever. And as we walked past, on some signal, they all lifted up the skirts and opened the legs, and not one of them had a pair of knickers on. So, mind you, there's nothing we could do about it because we had to get back, you know. They knew that as well. I mean, they knew it. And going back to this cooking business now, you see, we lived, I think, as far as I can remember, on cheese and onion. That's the only meal I remember ever having. And somewhere along the line, we got a bug in the food. And everybody had the most desperate diarrhea. And the toilets, well, they weren't toilets. It was just a long trough. And you just put your bottom over it. That's all you did. And this was full to overflowing. And the smell and everything was dreadful. And I can remember this corporal saying to me, as I had the dash, and he said, for God's sake, he said, don't cough, you'll siphon the whole bloody lot by.
So what was the general organisation and support you were getting there? I mean, what did you feel? It didn't sound like the British Army's greatest efficiency, did it?
I don't know, I suppose, yes, it was efficient in its own way, it sort of ticked on, you know. And then this night of the May the 10th, everything was just, we just used to wander about, by the way, but just had our place in the local cafe where we went and everything like that. And I learned the French word chatouiller, what it means. And this corporal of ours who spoke French, I said, what does it mean? And this girl in the cafe, she was a daughter, she used to come up behind me and tittle me, you see, and sort of, you know, make a bit of a fuss of me. And this is, well, chatouiller is the French word to tittle, you see, and this, she said, well, she likes you, you know. So that was another little episode.
How old were you then?
I was 19, yeah. Mm. I was 19 in the September the war broke out, yeah. Mm. I was 18 when it started, but I was 12th of September, I turned 19.
So how long were you at Ronc?
Well, immediately, as I say, we were there till May 10th, when we suddenly were wakened up by all this bombing and noise of aeroplanes and searchlights and everything. And we were told, of course, that the Germans had invaded France and Belgium. So...
What was the atmosphere like then?
Well, see, I mean, I can all speak personally. To me, it was just one big adventure. That's all I can say. To me, it was one big adventure. That's all I can say. It was exciting. And we upsticked, I don't know how long, and we immediately went off into Belgium. And the thing that impressed me there most of the time was the struggle with the horde of refugees that were on the road.
So where did you actually go to? You went from Ronk?
Somewhere into Belgium, that's all I can tell you. And then it was a constant changing of orders. We were told... actually, if anybody really wants to know, Jackie Smythe, the brigadier, wrote a book about this. And his chief clerk, if you want his name, I'll tell you his name, he was given the BEM for keeping a diary of all the events of everything that happened. So these became the basis of Jackie Smyre's book, you see, and we all thought this was a bit of a fiddle, you know, that he should get the BM.
Yeah.
Actually, his Batman got the military medal, and nobody knows why, but...
What did you see of this then? I mean, you were being moved about from one place.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was just a case of, well, you see, I just got on my motorbike and rode wherever we had to go to. And
what was your duty then? You were a dispatch rider? Or
I'm Scotland, in the intelligence section. And I will be sent out to do different things. For example, I don't know where I was going, but I arrested a German spy one day. I was driving through this village and these French people sort of stop, you know, and sort of, espion. So they pointed out this fellow in civ is walking off down the road. So as I said, I got a revolver. So I drove off in front of him, stopped the bike, got off, turned round and loosened the holster flap. I thought, you know, we don't know. So I walked up to him, and as I walked up to him, he put his hand inside his jacket. And in the true, you know, film tradition, I said, I grabbed the gun and pulled it out. And he said, no, he put his hands up. No. And he was a German. And he was a refugee from, there were a lot of German refugees, you know, in those days, who come to escape the Nazis. And he had the proper identification, said that he'd been interrogated and all the rest of it. Because one of our other jobs that I used to do, when German prisoners were brought in, I was often given that they came to brigade headquarters where there was interpreters from the intelligence corps were there, and I was given the job to guard them until they were interrogated. And I recognised the thing that he'd got. I'd seen so many of them, because the sad thing was, this was desperately sad, I thought, thousands of refugees cramming the road, horses, carts, grandmothers, everybody piled up, and somebody would drag somebody up because he looked a healthy, young, strong man. They'd drag him off the cart and bring him in for interrogation. And I can remember this fella crying because the refugees just kept on moving, and he didn't know where they were, where they got to, and his wife and kids had just disappeared into distance, and he was perfectly innocent. And this was happening all the time.
Do you think the British were quite windy about imagining there were Germans? Well, there were all sorts.
They were supposed to be nuns, dressed up as nuns, parachutists coming down. And they were all baloney, I'm sure it was. I never came across anything like that. In fact, that was just a little incident that happened to me. But I'm sure, because I knew that he was an innocent man, I just let him go again, which upset the French people in the village. They thought I should have shot him. They wanted me to shoot him. Going back to these refugees again, the German Air Force used to fly at about 100 feet? Twice the height of that tree there. And they'd just come floating down the road, and of course everybody would dive off into the side. Sometimes they'd open up with a machine gun, you know, give them a spray of... But on one occasion, we were near a place called Orshi, and we'd run out of food. And we knew that in Oshie there was a food dump, but you still had to have permission of the French to go and get food from that dump, or otherwise you'd have been shot for looting. So now I can remember to this day, Lieutenant Chambers was my house shouting, "Where are you? Where are you?" And I was chatting up a French girl, actually. And there were two fellas there who obviously thought they should be chatting her up and not me. So they shouted, "He's over here, sir! He's over here!" So I had to go then because anyway, I had to take a part, or I was one of a party that had to go to Oshie to this food dump. And we took a 3-ton truck and I went on my motorbike and we got to this place. It's a big building, so it's a stone-walled courtyard and refugees going past outside. And one of these, I can see this clearly now, Heinkel 111 coming down the road at quite low level. And it's true, this. The bomb doors open and I saw the bomb coming out. Well, the bomb's coming out, just thinking of them coming out. And Fergie Law, who was the quartermaster sergeant, he flung himself on the floor up against this stone wall. He was almost trying to dig a hole with his hands, you know. And the strange thing is, you're not frightened. No, you know, you read about people, their whole life flashes past their eyes. And it's never happened to me. Never in my life has it happened to me. But I hit the deck, went down. And luckily, the bomb, it was stone walls on either side, and it landed on that side of the stone wall instead of landing in the courtyard. Now, if it landed in this courtyard where we were, would have had it. But it landed on the other side. And anyway, we got the food that we wanted, and I added a few things to my own collection that I wanted. Condensed milk. That was a boon. Condensed milk. Nestle's milk.
So,
you know.
Who had put this food dump there? Was it?
Sorry, who?
Who had put the food dump there?
Oh, I don't know. The French, I presume, because yeah. We had to get the French authorities. Yeah. So it was chaos, really. I can remember being on guard one night, and a car came hurtling up at high speed and screeched to a halt, and some fellas got out, about twice as big as me, dressed in what I assumed was Belgian officer's uniform, but he asked me the direction to some place. Now this is in the early hours of the morning, on my own. But to be honest, I did think they were Belgian officers, but afterwards, I thought about it. Could they have been these Germans, you know, that people said were wandering about in the foreign? But anyway, I told them where to go because the main thing was these attacks by the German Air Force. I can remember going into a little village somewhere and there's a chap with a brain gun on a tripod mounted on top of a farm cart, and the German bombed it and he actually shot it down. But they were so low and flying so slowly, he'd all the time in the world, and he must have hit the pilot and the thing just crashed. And of course, these were some of the prisoners, the first prisoners that I had to guard, these German Air Force fellas.
Just going back, because I want to get everything clear, because I don't know what it was like. I don't know, I know very little about the history, and we must assume that someone listening to this doesn't. Mm-hmm. So when you were sent out on your motorbike, what would you be going to do?
I don't know. I'll tell you another. I wouldn't know now, but this occasion I do remember. We'd landed up at a farmhouse. And this will make you laugh, because when I got there, I walked down the path towards the farm, and a herd of black and white cows charged towards me, mooing and mooing. And I turned and ran. I thought they were going to attack me, but I realised later what they wanted milking. The farm had been abandoned, and they desperately wanted to be milked. Well, I'm sure this was the answer. But anyway, the point is, we set up headquarters in that farm, and I went off to sleep upstairs in a barn on some sacks that were up there.
Do you know where the farm was? Somewhere in...
If I read Jackie Smythe's book, I could probably hear the information in there.
Yeah, OK.
But it was after this Orchy incident.
Right.
We were all over northern France and Belgium.
Right. Sorry to interrupt. So you went upstairs.
Just, you know, wherever we were sent, And
so you went upstairs.
Yeah, I was asleep, fast asleep, and Sergeant Smith, that was my section sergeant, was asleep nearby. Anyway, I was told to go and find the defence platoon. They'd started to defend headquarters like ours. They give us a platoon from a battalion, and this in case it was from the 4th East Lancs Regiment, about a platoon, about 30 men and an officer, to guard the headquarters. They got lost. Go and find them. So I have to drive back. This is, again, all things happen to me at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Have to drive back up this road in dense mist, looking for this platoon. Can't see a thing. So I stop every now and then, shut the engine off and listen. And after about 3 or 4 attempts and some miles up this road, I heard these marching feet. And I knew them. I knew, because they marched. British soldiers march, you know. So anyway, to take no chances, I drove into the ditch at the side of the road and shut the engine off. And as they approached me, I could hear them speaking English. So I forget exactly what I shouted out. I said, "Don't shoot!" Something like this. "Don't shoot! I've come to find you. I think I know who you are." And bang, this halted like that. And somebody said, it must have been the sign, said, "All right, come out, let's see you." So I walked towards them with my hands up and I said, "Look, are you the defence platoon? Because that's who I'm looking for." "Yes," he said, "we are." He said, "We don't know where to go." I said, "Well, follow me." Anyway, I mean, I couldn't ride a motorbike at walking pace. So the sergeant suggested that what I did, I took him down to the headquarters, find out where they were, then he could come back for these men. So I drove him down perhaps a mile and a half down to the crossroads and then sort of gave him directions how to find the farm and rode off. Now, afterwards I found out, we were back in England, sometime later on, I met up with this sergeant again. He came to our headquarters and in the course of a conversation he said, "You're the chap who saved my life." "But how did I do that?" So he recounted this story. Now, what had happened, when he went back to find the platoon, they must have been captured, because it is a sequel to this. They'd been captured in some sort of little battle. Because when I got back, I went straight back up into the barn and went to sleep. Now, the following morning, I waked up, head of my sergeant sticking through the trap door. "Where the bloody hell have you been?" "I said, I've been here all night." "You've what?" Anyway, to cut a long story short, the Germans had attacked this farm, taken it. They'd had, our chaps had had to leave. And I was fast asleep up in the barn. But they mounted a counterattack, drove them out again. I knew nothing of this. I was fast asleep upstairs in the barn.
So you slept through. There must have been gunfire.
Oh, yes, I suppose so, but it would be mainly small arms fire and that sort of thing.
But you'd slept through the
lot. It probably wasn't a large...
There must have been some shooting, but
this is what I think happened to the defence platoon. They probably got involved or they were probably captured and, you know, something like that. But I was lucky. So
they were using you as a sort of...
in many ways, a kind of dispatch rider in some instances, and it's hard to remember now. Mm. 60 mm. years ago.
Yeah. So we got up sort of chronologically. We got to sort of the 10th of May.
Yeah.
So how did the events proceed from there?
Well, it was just a repeat of what I said, moving about from place to place, principally the German Air Force dropping bombs or machine gunning or things like that. And sometimes the roads were so jammed with refugees and carts, they had to drive off the road and drive through the fields and to get past them.
Where were the refugees going to? Just going.
God knows, this is what I couldn't understand. Where were they going? I've never been able to understand. It was so Stupid, I thought. You see, but you get these tales. The Germans are going to come along, they're going to murder everybody, they're going to rape the women and kill the children and all the rest of it. Stupid stories that I never believed, honestly and truthfully. They were an arrogant lot of bastards, you know. I mean, these Air Force people that we took as British, they thought they were superior beings, you know, but...
Tell me about some of the prisoners, then, that you had to deal with.
Well, I was really, I can't tell you more than that. The way they acted, the sort of...
Can you tell me perhaps one instance where you would bring a prisoner in, would you, to be interrogated?
Well, it was just that he was an Air Force... He was out of this crew that this fellow had shot down that I was telling you about earlier. And... he was so arrogant, that's all I can, you know, and he sort of treated everybody with contempt, looked as if we were inferior beings, that's all I can tell you, really, but...
So members of the Intelligence Corps did the...
Yes, the members of the Intelligence Corps people did the actual interrogation,
and
yeah.
What were they actually trying to find out? What was their main thing?
I suppose where they come from... These were German, I'm talking about, these were German Air Force people, but really what you would want to know is the dispositions of, if they'd been infantry people, the dispositions of the troops, where they were and who they were, that kind of thing. Really, looking back, I mean, it was quite an adventure, that's all I can say. I was riding about on a motorbike and enjoying it thoroughly.
Did the Germans talk? I mean, did they get information out of them?
Oh, I doubt it. You could recognise probably this is what we had to learn to recognise the insignia, yeah, and the ranks and things like that. But it really was a bit... I don't know, really. I don't want to say haphazard, but... I tell you, as a lad of 19 with a motorbike, riding about northern France and Belgium, and it's sort of, we come across, I'll tell you the last incident I think I remember. We were eventually, I had the map for a long time, which said which route we had to follow to get to the coast. Now, by the time our division was put on rear guard, and everybody had sort of gone to Dunkirk and been evacuated from Dunkirk. But by that time, Dunkirk was just a mass of sunken ships. You couldn't get anybody anywhere near. So we were sent to the beaches to embark from there. We came up again. This is about 2 o'clock in the morning again. And we struggling across. Somebody decided all the fields round there, it can be flooded. They open floodgates and they flood the fields, and they've all got deep ditches at each side, so they're about 6 feet deep. So we're trudging through this mud up to our knees, struggling along, and we came across this other fellow, Sergeant Parkinson. He was the cipher expert, you know, because you had to send messages in code. And we did it eventually, but in those days he did it. And we came across a couple of fellas struggling with a wounded man on a stretcher, and they were obviously shattered. So we said, come on, we'll take it off you. So he got one end and I got the other. And if you ever tried to lift a body on a stretcher and walk through a foot of mud, it's difficult, believe me. And eventually we got to the side of the road, and we were doing this because all the road is blocked with burning vehicles. Vehicles have come down and piled up behind one another, and we're told to set them on fire to destroy them so there were no use to the Germans.
These are British vehicles?
Yeah, British vehicles, yeah. And in fact, I rode as far as I could on my motorbike, and in the end, I drove it into a ditch full of water, and I did think, I took the petrol cap off, and I did think of trying to put a bullet in the engine, but I thought, well, it's too dangerous, somebody might hear the shot and shoot me. So... Could the trigger happen, you know? You hear them and somebody opens up. So we got over this ditch, somebody put a plank, and I'm quite sure this fellow is dead. But But Park is up at the front and I'm behind, and we're struggling along like this, juggling, and we staggered up this plank and got him onto the road. And we collapsed with exhaustion. So somebody else, a couple of other fellas, took it over. That's how things went on, you know. I had no idea who he was, where he was from, what regiment, anything. And then we struggled on along the road into a little place called Braedoon, and then onto the beaches. And we got in the sand dunes. The next morning, Sergeant Smith, my section sergeant, God knows where, produced a washbowl full of water, made a fire, poured some tea in, and brewed a tea. Now, this is where these tins of Nestle's milk came in, you see, because you had milk and sugar all in one.
So you've been carrying those, haven't you?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, we'd all, well, they were worth the weight in gold, those things. So we had this brew up of tea, and then another German plane came along the beach, quite, you know, just firing haphazardly, just to be a nuisance, you know, and everybody dies back for cover out of the way. And during the day, we couldn't do much about it, really, because it's very shallow, the sea there. It's about, for a long, long way out, it's probably about this, 2 feet six, 3 feet at the most. So you couldn't get big ships in. I don't know, I never saw any of these, this flotilla of these small ships. I don't know where, but we never saw any. And eventually somebody had the bright idea, I think somebody should have been the given medal for this. All these three-tonner trucks, which are big, enough time.
Yeah, carry on.
They've got a canvas cover on, iron hoops, metal hoops like that, and we drove them into the sea at low tide as far as we could. Not me personally, I mean all of us, you know. And then, God knows where, somebody produced planks, and we all took the straps off our webbing and lashed these planks on top of these metal hoops, so that when they tide came in, you've got a pier, a walkway, a causeway, whatever. Other people were filling sandbags, so I mean, in the trucks to hold them down so they wouldn't be washed away by the water. And it was a brilliant piece of work. We built a pier out of army lorries, right out into the sea. And we took them, did this at low tide, as far as it could go. Then, of course, at night, when the tide comes in, along comes a great big ship, stands off about probably 50 yards away because the water's deep right there. A couple of fellows, sailors, you know, I mean, Ryan had a chance. It was a civvy ship. What I mean, it had been, I don't know, probably across Channel Ferry or something, I don't know. But they rowed these lifeboats out at the end of the pier, and then we didn't panic or anything. We were walked along, told, we all went along, took our turn, and then they rowed these boats back to the ship. Well, again, this is about 2 o'clock in the morning when it was my turn to get on, and it was stupid, really. I mean, the propellers pulling on one oar this way, one oar this way, we're doing all sorts of things like that. But eventually they got to the side of the ship and they had one of these zigzag ladders down the side. And we climbed up there, and it was full then when I got on it. People were everywhere, just full of, and a lot of French soldiers too, incidentally, I noticed. Now, I don't know really what happened after that, but very soon after that, we sailed away, and we sailed through the night, and we landed at Margate the next day. I remember that hitting Margate Pier as it came in, and thump, you know, really hit the pier.
Do you remember what date that was?
Yeah, Thursday, May 31st. Which beach
did you come off?
Well, it's Braedoon. The place is called Braedoon. And I went back there some years afterwards, and it was exactly the same. I can remember walking up the same little street onto the promenade, but on the promenade they had a little monument to a French division that had stayed behind to sort of cover the retreat. Although our division did cover that side of it, the Belgian border. But we had to come off there because we couldn't get to Dunkirk at all.
Bill Millard, end of Reel 2.